I have a question.
Yeah.
I just want to know...
Is that about this document?
Yeah. Will the Corporation for Public Broadcasting...
What's going to happen there?
...that we're going to get $101,000 this fiscal year. I don't know how they're affected.
Could she get the mic?
I don't know how the CPB is affected by the machinations in Congress, but do you have any idea?
No, I don't. We need to find out what year this is going to come to pass.
Okay. Now what has happened is the House has axed CPB funding for NPR and a few things like that. Probably will not make it through the Senate. Where we're seeing an effect is what's called PTFP funding, which it looks like both the House and Senate and the White House are all opposed to continuing. And that is money that is usually used to buy new equipment that is done in a grant style, a lot of times for new stations, but also for updating equipment that is at end of life that they will replace and emergencies. And I don't know.
And that's being cut also?
That is being eliminated.
Eliminated.
From what I can tell.
Yeah.
And
do you know as of what date?
No, don't know that, but I got the feeling they were talking about this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And the current funding cycle, they're asking for grants. I think they're due later this month, and grant proposals, and, of course, there may be no money for them. So.
For this PTFP, they're still asking for proposals?
Well, they were. Mm-hmm. Now, you know,
but there may not be grants.
There may not be any funding for it. So.
Okay. Does anybody know when CPB money is going to disappear?
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet because
it depends on what happens in the Senate and with the president and so forth.
Okay.
So
everybody's operating on a CR, right?
Okay. And I have one other question. At the bottom of that first page, other revenue, $169,000. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what that is?
Well, if we went back to this kind of sheet, everything that's not mentioned here is in here.
Okay.
So
but it's other. Whatever. All right.
The reason it's other is because we're only addressing a few things here, but she wanted to keep the totals in line.
Okay, thank you. All right, other questions?
Henry.
All right, that's good enough. Just clarification, the 101K on the CPB, these are actuals received, are they not, through February?
Yes.
So that 101 is not going away. That's presumably already...
That's here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We've got it. Okay.
Yeah. Just a couple more questions. Well, an observation and a question. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the standard is, the procedure about accounting and stuff, but to me it seems a little funny to list the Heath assets, the full value of the restricted thing in the same category with our operating account, because in fact we can't spend the 375 or the 430.
Well, it isn't up here.
Yes.
And under the operating account, there is a heading that says restricted.
No, I understand that.
Okay.
I appreciate that, but yeah, I guess that 805 doesn't seem, well, I don't know. I mean, now that I understand, it's
not really
a problem, but
yeah.
that number isn't actually something, I mean, I guess
it's
actually a cash asset, but we can't actually spend it. Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's a cash asset, but what we can spend is our operating account.
And I was a little confused about your description of how the Heath payouts work.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said we could apply. We had to apply for distribution for that June distribution.
That's correct.
But you said 10 to 13,000 or something.
That was the estimate that the person taking care of our account told me would be would probably be offered at the time that they make this. They go through a complicated process called examining 16 rolling quarters. And so she looked at the total value at a certain date and just projected that come next June, but it won't really be June 30th. Their year ends June 30th, and we would find out in July or August what amount we might apply for.
But in other words, it's not based on the market appreciation during that previous fiscal year or something. It's based on some kind of rolling calculation.
It's based on 16 quarters. Yeah.
Well, that's actually probably prudent, right?
Well, I think this financial group is very prudent. I mean, that's why they take care of their nonprofit and they take care of money for nonprofits.
Right. Okay. Just one last quick one, just a detail. Under... I guess I understand. Never mind. Oh, that's it for me.
Okay. Mel?
I'd like to know the basis on which $150,000 of our money is being restricted because of a foundation loan.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense to me, but perhaps there's a reasonable explanation.
Maybe Tracy knows, because Tracy was on the Finance Committee last year and...
It dates back several years, but I can tell you this.
It's about 3 years or so that it's been held, right? My understanding, and Tracy can correct this, is that the CFO commanded it.
No, it was done by the board, and I'll explain it to you.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. Did you have any other question, Mel?
No, but I'd like the answer.
Okay. Go ahead, Tracy.
Can I ask the questions that I originally had on the stack first, and then I'll get back to the to the CD?
About this document? About this grid thing?
Okay. Yeah. Just one note, which is, and I know you said that you would be getting it and you didn't have it, and I understand that, but it's, I'd just like to reiterate, it's helpful to get the current accounts payable when we're looking at anything like this. Those are our liabilities, and whenever you declare what your assets are, you also want to declare what your liabilities are. And part of the reason that I'm asking is back in last year's fall budgetary process, we were going through the process of trying to find out what the current accounts payables were. And we went through a series of figures ranging from $40,000 to $50,000 to the figure Simon eventually came up with of almost $90,000, only to find out under audit that as of September 2010, the figure was, in fact, $167,000. So it grew
a
whole lot.
So we need more accuracy.
I think we need to have that figure sort of, you know, periodically, be it monthly, quarterly, sort of, you know, tracked and tracked accurately, because it makes a difference. If you have $200,000 in the bank and $20,000 in payables, or $200,000 in the bank and $120,000
in payables.
It
probably involves a lot of speculation.
It's very different.
But it can be done. There are ways to make estimates about things.
It should be done. It should be done because it makes a difference on the bottom line. Okay, that was number one. Number two, in terms of the Heath income, I think that generally based on the accounting protocol that we're using, we might not want to call an unrealized gain. We haven't collected yet income per se as we've done on this grid. It is not income. It is a payable that is due to us, or it's an accounts receivable from a restricted fund source, but until it's in our hands, it's not really income per se. So using it to say that we have 1.589 in income isn't really quite right. So maybe something just from a recording
there
point
is,
of view that we want to alter.
In other words, you don't think the asterisk with the statement at the bottom, unrealized gain, is adequate? You think it should be separated out?
I think that on the grid, I don't care. I think on the grid, it's fairly clear. I think on that using it to quantify our revenue received through February, because it's added into the number, really wouldn't be correct. It is it is something you can put as an asset on
I'm under the impression that
income statement.
That Maria got that from the national office, but I'm not sure.
That may be. Mm-hmm. I would kick back and say I don't think you should do it that way for what it's worth.
That's good. I'm glad to have that note.
If they disagree, then I guess that's that, but I still think so. Third thing, telephone. We recently had a problem with our telephones, as we know. Originally in the budget was to do something about the telephone system. It eventually got pulled in the problems regarding salary levels. It's not in this year's budget.
I think that's why Maria put this green line in here as
it may have to
missing, and she certainly concurs that the phone system needs to be
Yeah, if
updated.
We get into some sort of a budget review process at any point, and mm-hmm. this might happen nationally too, I don't know. I think it's mm-hmm. an issue because it's a big chunk. It's a $50,000 mm-hmm. expense. Okay, mm-hmm. which I guess brings us to the CD. So I wanted to say two things about it. One, we'll be answering Mel's question with the history. The first is the difference between the $100,000 and the $150,000. The amount that is securing a line of credit is $100,000, period. The $50,000 is an ACH amount that is, I guess, securing KPFA's lockbox. It's a different matter.
What is ACH?
I don't believe so.
That's...
Okay.
I believe it's that way.
What is ACH?
You have a lockbox on Green Street.
No, we don't any longer. That okay. company went out of business.
Then that $50,000 should be available in company.
Well, my understanding was that it was added to the support of the line of credit mm-hmm. because the line of credit was extended.
Ah, well, that could be. That could be.
I believe it is. Mm-hmm. Because initially...
The line of credit's only for $100,000, so you are securing it with more money than it's worth.
Originally, $100,000 was put toward
right.
the line of credit, but the $50,000 was okay. added also to
okay.
that.
So the history. The history is in 2008, the Pacifica National Board of Directors, the acting executive director then was Sherry Gendelman, went ahead and took out, well, there was an attempt to originally mortgage the KPFK building in order to take a rather large balloon loan. That proposal was rejected by the Pacifica National Board, and the compensatory proposal that came through was to use KPFA's funds, $400,000 that was then in a CD, to take a line of credit to support what were basically the cash needs of the New York station, WBAI, which was in severe shape.
And remains so.
It remains so, slightly less severe than it was in 2008. That's the good news, but I think severe is still the right word. The losses were about a third lower in 2010, but in 2008 they were pretty bad, and they're still not good. So that line of credit was, in fact, it was brought forward by Sherry Gendelman as her proposal. The board endorsed it. While they did not endorse the balloon loan, as I said, that wrapped up KPFK's building. So they took this as an alternative, and that line of credit was approved. It was at the time, I believe, a $400,000 line of credit secured by a $400,000 CD, and KPFA's funds were so used. In 2009, LaVarne Williams became the CFO, I guess, in early 2009. Mm-hmm. That line of credit came due. What she ended up doing in order to free KPFA's funds was to use the Heath line of credit that belonged to the national office. She used those funds to release. To release a significant...
It's a different Heath grant, not the one we're talking about.
There are two halves of the Heath grant. KPFA's, which was in a desk for a year and a half and is now at the San Francisco Foundation. Pacifica's, which was spent to release KPFA's CD, a good chunk of it, from being held by the national line of credit. So I believe 300,000 of the 375,000 was used that way. I believe it was $200,000 was returned to KPFA in 2009. I believe it was returned to the operating account and then spent, so it is now gone, but it was returned. It's 200 or 300 was returned to KPFA. Right. The remaining $100,000 did remain in a smaller line of credit. My understanding from last year's budgetary process is that $100,000 of central services money that KPFA was supposed to pay last year and didn't was going to be written off in exchange for the CD. But LaVarne Williams can probably clarify that. I don't know if that's actually happened or not. According to this financial statement, it looks like it hasn't. But the idea, because there was over $250,000 in 2010 that wasn't paid to the national office, is that $100,000 of that would be paid off by the CD. May or may not work out that way.
Sounds like
that's pretty much it. So the history was, as I said, that $400,000 was originally tied up by Sherry Gendelman in the 2008 PNB. $300,000 of that was sent back to KPFA using the Heath money, and the $100,000 is the remaining 25% of that 2008 obligation.
Okay, thank you.
If you can confirm that next month, I'd appreciate it.
All right.
Not the history, but the current situation.
Okay. Yes. Ooh, that's not going to work.
It's easier, though, if it's free.
Just give her that one. That's all right.
I have a question on line number 10, community events.
Yes. Okay.
It looks like we've been doing really well for the first quarter in terms of the revenue from the community events, because if you look at both for November and December, the proposed budget was $2,200, and then we actually made $6,000 mm-hmm. more in December as well. So I think it would be very great if we can actually have a breakdown of which, you know, what these community events are and which event is making, you know, what amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that could give us some, you know, very critical information in terms of what it is that, you know, communities mm-hmm. is finding interested, you know, mm-hmm. to attend events. So if we can actually have, you know, which event made how much money.
That's what I've got on the notes here, a more full report about community events. Okay. Anybody else? Did you have a question? That's I said it would be the whole crafts fair and community events. Yes, Andrea.
Well, as I'm looking on the section, the bottom part of this paper,
mm-hmm.
revenue
the front
for,
page.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
revenue and events. It's a very significant drop in what we've been able to generate, and bearing in mind the economy being what it is, that's still wildly disproportionate.
Wait a minute. You're talking about the
I'm talking about we're going from $232,000 in fiscal year 2008 to where we are, $91,000.
But that's only through February. The left-hand column is just this year this far.
Whew. Thanks God.
It's only one quarter.
Thanks God.
It's 5 months.
So what I would ask though is I'm especially interested in development,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not clear about how that happens, because I'm also, you know, I'm concerned about grants and I don't know what, like, who's writing the grants, and it seems like it's not happening. So I guess that's another way of saying that. But I guess I would like to better understand our approach or lack thereof, to development. So anything that goes, if there's anybody whose job it is to be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is not a development director.
But there are
people doing these events.
Right.
So
are they considered to be developers? What do they want to, like. I beg your pardon?
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sawyer. In actual fact, I have been volunteering, and I haven't found out, so go figure.
Okay, let's try and not have crosstalk, please. Thank you. Go ahead, Andrea.
But in our efforts to do outreach and to be on the fundraising committee, I think it is relevant information. I think it would be helpful to know who,
yes.
if it's Jan or who else it is.
And we also note in the fundraising committee meetings that some things raise more money than others. Some raise more goodwill. And so I think any report that we have about community events and the crafts fair is going to take that into account. Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Barbara. And I'm sure that if people think of questions afterwards, you can email Barbara at treasurer, whatever that is. Yeah. And she will add them to her list for next time. So we have been joined by Andrew Phillips, the interim general manager, and we had promised him that when he arrived, we would move to his point on the agenda. Andrew, can I just ask, we've been at this for an hour and a half. Do we need to take a quick break, or can we just forge ahead? I'm sorry? Forge right ahead. Okay. All right. So, Andrew Phillips, you're on. And, Andre, I'll hand you a microphone, I hope. Oh, yes. Excuse me. Hold on one second. Just for the record, I want to note that board member Sasha Futran has joined us, so she is currently present. Thank you, Sasha. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, hello, everybody. My name's Andrew Phillips. And
the mic isn't working.
Hello, everybody. Check, check. One, two. My name's Andrew Phillips, and obviously this is my first time at your meeting, LSB meeting. I don't know how much you know about me.
Nothing.
Nothing? I was at WBAI back in from 1979 to about 1995. I was program director at WBAI for almost 4 years. Proud to say I walked out with my head still on my shoulders, as you might have noticed. I think we made some very significant changes at WBAI whilst I was there. We brought Amy Goodman to the morning show. I brought Amy Goodman to WBAI in 1984 when I was teaching at the university at Hunter College, teaching journalism. And so I've worked for Australian Broadcasting Corporation for quite a few years as an independent freelance documentary radio and film producer. I've produced a lot of radio documentaries. With Dennis Bernstein, I instituted the Contragate program at WBAI, which was quite successful. In other words, I have some experience in commercial radio, not commercial, public radio at Australian Broadcasting and at Pacifica. I've taught at New York University for 10 years and an adjunct professor in the film school at Hunter College, Marymount, Manhattan, New York Institute of Technology, and the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Australia. But my main teaching gig was at NYU for about 10 years, teaching in the Tisch School of the Arts, the film school. I left WBAI, I left radio, I ran out of things to say, really. I was a radio producer. I wasn't a political acolyte. I just had no more to say, so I became a gardener. From gardening, I became a permaculture acolyte. Use that word twice today. I studied with the founder of permaculture in Australia, Bill Mollison. I studied with one of the finest teachers of permaculture, Jeff Lawton, down in New Orleans the year before Katrina in 2004. I started something called the Hancock Permaculture Center in upstate New York, about 3 hours from New York City, where I've just recently departed. I heard about this job. I was asked if I was interested to apply, and much to my surprise, I said yes, because it was quiet, beautiful, and cold in Hancock, and I was getting tired of chopping wood. But it's been great. I've enjoyed coming out. I've had 4 days at the station. I'm very impressed by the quality of the producing staff. I'm not surprised by the rancorous situation because I've followed it to some extent through the years. When I was at WBAI, we didn't have those kinds of problems. But a lot's changed since then. I think the Pacifica national organization, perhaps it was one of the reasons I left Pacifica. I was very disappointed in the lack of vision and their interest in really backing producers. I'm a producer. I was a radio producer. That was my first and is my first interest. Pacifica, back in those days, seemed more interested in trying to create its own programming, and they weren't very good at it, neglecting to recognize the talent that rested in the organization. I started something called the Virtual Radio Network in 1995, I believe it was, when I left Pacifica. VRN, we called it. I like to think we were way ahead of the curve because the idea was to use the internet and to establish a catalog online. Now, I know I'm going to mention a sacrilegious word here. It starts with G, second initial, well, Gary Knoll, principles before personalities. He was one of the most popular broadcasters by far on WBAI. And because I believe in free speech, I didn't agree with everything he said, but I understood and recognized that the audience needed, wanted, loved his information. Not all of it, but a lot of it. He's helped a lot of people with health, including me. Difficult character. So I said to Gary, if Pacifica won't distribute you nationally, because I think, not because, I'm not interested in Gary Knoll per se, but I'm interested in alternative health information, big time. Never needed it more than now in this country, I would submit. I said, I'll distribute you. So we came to a deal. I put him on 40 stations. It's the reason he's on WPFW and on the Los Angeles affiliate for Pacifica, on the late night show. What's his name? Roy of Hollywood. He was even on Armed Forces Radio, 300 stations. So we had some success with that. But I wasn't doing that to distribute Knoll. I wanted to, because Pacifica wasn't capable, able, or interested to develop producers, I was interested. So we did develop a few. But I ran out of credit cards. The interest was too high, and I went bankrupt. Business went down the shooter. That's really why I became a gardener. And it was a great relief to work in a garden, have dirt under your fingernails at the end of the day and come home with 40 or 50 bucks in your pocket, ride your bicycle through Brooklyn and get a good night's rest. No stress. It's great. but here we are today. So it's amazing how quickly you can get back on the bicycle. I feel great. I've had a really interesting time meeting the producers at KPFA. We've already had a few little skirmishes, because I can sometimes be a bit fast and loose in my approach. Pat Scott used to call me Crocodile PD. I like that. But I'm a peacemaker. I hope I'm a visionary, because we need it, KPFA. I don't have a report because I've only been there 4 days. I will have a report next time around. And I want to work with you, and I hope we can work together. I think you bring a lot of local knowledge, which obviously I don't have, a lot of history too. I'm sure a lot of skills and definitely a lot of commitment. So I'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to visit or call me, you're very welcome. We can sit down and talk. I want to learn how the union works and how it doesn't. From a management point of view, it's causing a lot of problems at the station. The union would say the management's causing a lot of problems with the union. There's a lot of ruckus over so-called gag rule at the moment and reporting uncomfortable business on the air, $30,000 going to a $400 an hour law firm in the city. I don't know if I would approve of that or not. I don't want to really go there. It's too early to say. But it's a real shame that the Pacifica feels they have to go there if they do. And it's a shame that it has to be broadcast if it does. And it's a shame that we have to be in that situation from the very start. So because I'm a permaculture teacher, I'll give you a couple of precepts. Care of people, care of earth, return of surplus to both. That's the basic ethics of permaculture. Cooperation, not competition. that the first responsibility is to ourselves, our family, and our community, to the seventh generation. A lot of other, really, it's an ethical system. It's based on ethics. So I hope I can bring some of these ethical considerations into our network, into our station. I'm not going to proselytize permaculture per se, but because I teach it, I think it's valuable. I will be using some of its precepts, I think. I'd said on the radio the other day that when asked what's the most important thing we could be doing at the station, I said, well, right now I think it's emergency preparedness, actually. And let me fly a little bit loose on that one, not just for the literal emergency of the earthquake, of the fire, of the whatever. We need to be prepared at the station first, care of family, and in the community, care of the community. Because God forbid we had something like happened in Japan, is happening as we speak in Japan. I think we're invading Libya as I speak, by the way, for those unaware of it. I'll be going down to the station after this. I think we'll be talking about that on the radio. We need to be prepared so that before we can do anything, we've got to be strong and resilient within our own system. So I'd be very interested in your input into that. How do we do it? When do we do it? Now. That's when we do it. So I'll be talking to the staff about that, and we'll be proceeding with that. And then, of course, money. Now, I would suggest, and I don't have to tell you this, that unless our network, our station in particular, our network in general, is able to, in some way, get more money or distribute the money differently or find some other fungible way of maintaining our system, we're not going to be here much longer, I would suggest. Because the internet, I'm telling you something you already know, I'm sure. The internet and other media are getting stronger, and I don't think we're keeping up with the curve on that, in that regard. I think we could, we should, and I hope that we will. I've already been speaking to Michael Yoshida, who's a whiz on this kind of thing, in a general sense, but again, we'll be talking more specifically. We want to create a working group to explore ways in which we might better capitalize on our website. Because to me, radio is simply a portal at this point to the website. Radio provides what we call a scatter pattern. It's a lot of people, goes out, what, 100 miles? We've got a big area that we can touch. If you can get a certain percentage, 10% of people to go to a website and see what we got and display it in an attractive, interesting way at a price which is reasonable. Because I have to say, for years I've been really kind of embarrassed when I get on and pitch what I would describe as way overpriced premiums, which we call gifts to our audience, when really they're gifts to us. And actually it's false advertising. We can sit here and say, oh, we're not going to have sponsorship on our radio station. We do it every time we go into a membership drive. Selling people's books. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do, but I'm saying we need to revisit, I think, some of these issues. And I'll put it out right now. I am not against sponsorship at WBAI, at KPFA, or WBAI for matter. There's a lot of great businesses that deserve help that we should be part of or could be part of us, and that could go a long way towards solving our problem. It's a sticky one, isn't it? But it should be in the mix. It's not good enough to say no, no sponsorship. Because despite Lou Hill's genius, that was what, 60 years ago? A lot's changed. And we're in survival mode now. Are we going to survive as a system or not? And we're not going to survive if we continue to raise money the way we raise money. I submit. We've got to find another way to do that. The internet provides a platform for a catalogue, not just of the books and the tapes that we produce and pitch during our membership drives, but enormous amount of information that's out there that people may well be interested in can be directed to 24/7, not just during our membership drive periods, and buy these materials. I'm not sure how this would be set up. That's why we need a working group. But as I said, it's a 24/7 international operation. And we're not using it, I don't think. I've looked at the website. We've got some boxes. You click one, you click another. It's not interesting. We should be looking like Amazon.com. Come on. That's what I think. That's what I'd like to see. Fulfillment questions? I don't know the answer to that. How you make money from it? I don't know the answer to that. But I want to learn what's possible in regard to that. I said on the radio the other day, David, he said, what's one of the first things you'd like to do? I talked about emergency preparedness, and he asked me another question. I can't remember what it was, but the answer was solar panels on the roof. From the question, I said, I don't know how much we spend on electricity at the station. I don't think it's actually a huge amount because we've got the CFCs and all the rest of it. And you can't get enough electricity out of a solar cell to run a transmitter. But symbolism's important. The gesture's important. If we were to install solar cells on our roof, one, and or have one of our generous benefactors provide us with some property and put up a solar farm somewhere out there and sell the electricity back to PG&E, that'd get you some publicity. And I said on the radio, you could grow some tomatoes on the side too. That wouldn't be a bad idea. I'm quite serious. Food first. Without food, none of us are here. We've got to have some clean food. But we're not a gardening organisation. We're a radio organisation. I'm a bit of both, though. So that seems like a no-brainer to me. That doesn't seem so difficult. It seems like a pretty sexy idea, to tell you the truth. Putting some solar cells on the roof, one. Unlike Reagan, we'll leave them there. Maybe getting a solar farm or wind or something. Putting our money where our mouth is. Come on. Enough talk, action, dirt under the fingernails. That's where I'm coming from. I want to see the station get out into the street more. I want to hear more of the street inside the station. I got a lot of respect for the union. Prickly as it may be and as I may seem, I actually do. I've been cut down a little bit in a very polite way by some members, respectfully. I respect their cordiality, and I'll give it back to them too. But we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. I described us as having some kind of autoimmune disease at KPFA. We're eating our own. That's been going a long time in Pacifica. People say that's a symptom of the left. You know, we're all standing in a circle, that firing squad metaphor. These are simple things to say, but we've got real work to do. It's a very important time. You know that, and so do I. And so I'm coming in and hoping. I'm in the interim program director. I told the executive director that I want 6 months. After that, we'll decide if you want me or if I want you. I didn't ask to come to this job. I'm glad I'm here. I want to work with you, like I said. But if I haven't had some success, if we collectively haven't had some success in 6 months, I'm not even sure we'll be here in 6 months. I mean, we're talking about having another fundraiser in 3 weeks. Back to the trough again to raise like $200,000 plus across the network, a Pacifica-wide fundraiser. Pacifica-wide fundraiser across the network to raise money for Democracy Now. I think I hear we owe them $600,000. I hear we owe Free Speech Radio News $200,000 and change. Mm-hmm. And something we probably won't mention on the air because it won't be popular, we've got to pay the auditors. If we don't pay the auditors, we can't submit our paperwork to the CPB. Now, if I had my way, I'd say, excuse my language, fuck the CPB. That's what I'd say. I'd be totally independent, fair and balanced. Directives coming down, they're not fair and balanced. They insist we've got to be fair and balanced, and as soon as you enter that snake pit, you've got to work by their rules. But we've got to get that money now. Maybe it won't be there anymore. Maybe we're going to have to change. I don't know. But See, I think there are ways out of this, but we got to think anew. We got to really man up and woman up to this situation. And it won't be easy, but I think it's possible. And I guess that's all I'd like to say. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to entertain them. But together, working together, cooperation, not competition. You know, we're going to have our little differences, but conflict can be a very creative process. Friction's okay in every sense of the word. It's all right. Don't be afraid of it. But respect for one another is essential. And keep the damn police out of the radio station in the future. We'll try to work on that one. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Yep.
Okay, I want to suggest that board members who want to ask questions can do that, and that you restrict yourselves to one question each. Okay, are there any questions from board members?
Thanks.
None? You're such a, I thought you were such a curious lot. You wanted to know things. Okay, Jack, use the mic, please. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Jack. Jack Kurzweil. I would like to know, based on your experience and your vision, how you would address the issue of the similar but differing roles and status of paid professional staff and volunteer professional staff at the station. How do you see a direction towards minimizing the conflicts, antagonisms, establishing mutually respectful roles in it? That's my question. I would also, having been president of my union more than three times, my back bristles when somebody in management refers to the union as opposed to the people who belong to, are represented by, and protected by the union. So I just want to give you that as a kind of personal response to the abstraction of the union. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I meant no disrespect to the people in the union when I mentioned that. I'm not implying that you thought that I did, but thank you for the clarification. And I obviously have to step carefully around that issue because, as I said, I can be a bit rough around the edges and it's not... okay, not intended sometimes, usually is not. the volunteers, there's the volunteer staff, there's the unpaid staff, and there's the paid staff. The unpaid staff need to provide 30 hours of, in quotations, work. That could be 1 hour of programming because it takes hours sometimes to produce a program. It can take months to produce an hour of radio and a documentary. I've spent 6 months doing that sometimes. But it's all work. And then there's volunteers who volunteer in our in the phone rooms, et cetera, et cetera. Within the unpaid staff community, there's some fine producers. Now, I haven't met all of them. I've met a couple so far. Similarly, of course, in our paid staff, unionized staff, there's some... I mean, I said I've been really impressed. The station actually runs itself. It's had to run itself because there's been such a dearth in management for such a long time now. And it would be understandable that when a carpetbagger like me flies into town, you know, really, who's this guy? What's he know? Well, I know a little bit, but I don't know that much about KPFA or or California for that matter. But they've been running the station, keeping it on air, without much help from Pacifica for some time, and not all the time, but we know that history. We're going to have a general staff meeting in about 10 days, I think not this coming Thursday, but the following. It'll be held in the evening, so the unpaid staff can attend, not during the day, and of course the paid staff can attend too. And we'll be talking about some of these issues. I think that my understanding is that some of the unpaid staff feel to some extent, I don't know whether the right word is intimidated, but they feel secondary to the paid staff. I don't know how I'm going to deal with that directly as I'm standing here today, but I'm aware of the problem. And I don't know what the solution is yet, but there will be one, I think. When I was program director at WBAI, I tried to keep my mind on the programming. I think that's really why we're here. I mean, some of us love the ins and outs of management and budgets and stuff, but not many. Most of us are here because of the programming. Now, I'm not suggesting I'm rushing in to change all the programming and push that around, but that's what the audience hears. And once we concentrate on the programming, and it's good programming, you can feel it in your guts, you know, you feel it. I'd say good programming is felt more in the heart and the guts than the head, to tell you the truth. The head comes later. Then some of those differences begin to dissolve a little bit, because now we're concentrating on the programming, the inspiration of the programming. That's my answer. To be continued. Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I've seen several hands. Andrea, Susie, Matthew, and Lewis.
I gotta confess, I love that you're thinking outside the box. I do love that. My ears did go up when you said sponsorship. I did kind of get that business sponsorship, and I just a cultural heads up to you that's my ears are not the only ones that are going to do that when you talk about encouraging business sponsorship and what forms that might take. So there's a lot of wariness of that sort of approach. I do want to encourage you to look, you know, we're talking, before you got here, we were talking about a bit about development and just the degree to which that has atrophied within the management and within the station. So I would ask that you just go back and really examine that closely. But I'd also like to know, how would you like to, because there has been some creative thinking and some ideas about ways to deal, you know, with having a membership that actually gets you archived special footage online, that there's no mailing of anything, you can just have an account that is renewed annually or something like that. But how would you like to receive proposals, or how do you want to hear that kind of stuff? Because it's out there in the community, and I'm just curious what is your preferred method? I know that emails sometimes are overwhelming or that sort of thing.
Andrea.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, first of all, I just threw that sponsorship. I knew we were going to get this prickly one, but I'm not afraid of the prickly issues at all. I think we've got to open up the whole system and see what we can do here, because we really are in a, I don't want to overuse the word, but it does seem like a crisis to me. But it's been like this for so long. We're always on the edge. We need more audience. You know all this. We're going to reconstitute the program council. I've already been speaking to people about the old council. I'm not quite familiar how it worked, but I've been looking through. It's quite complicated, actually, the way it was put together. I worked with the program council at WBAI. And I saw it as a really helpful way for a program director to provide authentic input or receive authentic input from producers. And I don't believe there was one occasion when we got to the end of the process that we were not in agreement about a program change, because it had been fair dialogue. And even though the program director had the final sign-off, it was an authentic advice and consent situation. So maybe that's one way to bring in that information. I'm not quite sure. I think we need to set up some working groups. Now, one of the things I thought about when I took this job, and I've been engaged in this a couple of times, I don't know how many of you are familiar with something called open source technology meeting process. Yeah. I'd be really interested in creating some of those, and for those that don't know about it, maybe you can speak to your board colleagues or look on the wiki. It's all there. Open source technology. It's a way of meeting, a way of quickly moving through an agenda in a very non-hierarchical way and moving forward. And I've been engaged and been really amazed at how it works. So I think we can have a series of these meetings, even in the board situation. You can do this with a smaller group or much larger groups. That's one way. We need to, at the station, like I said, I've been speaking to Michael, and this is all fresh off the press. There's nothing been set in concrete yet about setting up a working group to look at the emergency preparedness and the internet, how we might use it differently and better. And that has to happen pretty quickly. So working groups is one way within the station. I think there's a variety of ways we can do it. We don't want to get overloaded with formal meeting processes. And you can call me on the phone and come and visit. I'm open and throw your ideas at me. You will find me approachable. I usually keep my door open, you'll find. I usually return phone calls. Try to do that. I do that. Phone is better than email, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, waiting all the complaints through the complaints in the email can take a bit of time, you know, and some compliments as well. But face-to-face is great. A piece of paper on the desk is better. You know what I mean? Face-to-face or a piece of paper, to me, better than email. So knock on the door. I mean, that's the first, you know, when I got my first job was in advertising in Australia. No one walked out of the room. But I worked in advertising as a young man. I couldn't get a job. I got it by walking the streets, knocking on doors. And after 50 doors, one opened, I got a job. Yes, face-to-face. Yeah.
Okay. So my speakers list is Matthew Hallinan, followed by Susie Goldmacher, followed by Lewis Sawyer. Matthew?
Okay. I have a question about the programming. And because I think everybody's interested in programming, but we seem to have different ideas about what kind of programming we want. And we are a listener-supported station, as you know, and we have this special democracy, and we have listeners elect people to the boards here. And I'm just wondering how you see the input of listeners into, you know, their preferences playing some role in the programming choices that are made. And right now we're having a very sharp struggle around this morning show thing. And yeah. Our impression is, from everything we see, that the listeners have very clear preferences here. And how would you see factoring that into the kinds of decisions that management would make at the station?
What's your name, sir?
Matthew.
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 Okay, Matthew. Okay, I'll try to be brief. Let me use a metaphor. To me, a radio station is like a boat. Sure, a ship or a sailboat. You've got to have a captain and you've got to have a crew, but if you don't work together, you don't get anywhere. But there has to be leadership, and in terms of audience input, there has to be input into the station, and there has to be leadership from the station. That's been my experience. That sometimes a great program can come out of nowhere, can come out of an idea that one person can have, and obviously just Contragate was that. I mean, we didn't wait for the audience to tell us, you've got to have a program called Contragate. Dennis Bernstein had some Eugene Hassan Fass. Anyone remember that name? Was shot down over Nicaragua, and all of a sudden that story exploded. And Bernstein said, hey, there's this Hassan, this incredible story. And he, you know, Bernstein, passion, energy, whether you agree with him or not, he's got that, that's for sure. How can we get this on the radio? And I said, well, walk into the program director, tell him you've got a great story. And that's what we did. And the next day, we were on at 8 o'clock in the morning with the program director, because the power of a good story, of an important story, pushes suddenly all of the walls come tumbling down. And so that's how that got on the air. With the program council, there will be opportunities for people to feed back into the station. And I would suggest, and I will suggest when we have our meeting, probably the best way for the audience or for an individual within the, in the audience or a group is to go to the program director, ask them how the proposal should be put. It doesn't have to be too formal. Or just send a short letter, not too complicated. But better to ask, what do you want, a synopsis, a treatment? What are the elements? It doesn't take much more than a page. I can help with that. And then it goes back to the program. See, the program director can help that audience person shape the program, because the audience person may not realize that there's already someone else coming up with the same idea or similar idea. So it needs to be shaped a little bit, not controlled, shaped, and done through the program council. That's what a program council should be for. And that's why I'd like to see it implemented again. I mean, that's in terms of the morning show. First of all, usually and generally, the general manager is not the program director, obviously, and it's usually a program director's decision. But we decided when I came in, because I have a very strong background in programming, I said, well, if I come in, I'm not going to be able to keep out of programming. I don't want to push my way in, but I'd love to work in conjunction with the program director. So I will have some input into it. Something has to change in the morning. I'm not sure quite what yet. I need to learn more about it. Like I said, it's been 4 days, so I really can't answer what's going to happen, but something will probably happen pretty soon. I don't know what, but I'm working on it. We're working on it. I can't tell you. Fortunately, Amy Goodman is, I think bringing Al Jazeera in was great to the station. I think really important professional news service. I'd like to hear it at a more accessible time. I think it's a bit early, actually, in the day. I'm not sure we need to have democracy on now twice, so close to one another. I'm just throwing ideas out. Maybe I shouldn't do this. It's so tricky. But I thought, I'd suggest that democracy now be repeated late in the evening, maybe 11 o'clock, something like that. You'd probably leave it at 7 o'clock, though. As we know, radio, the best time for radio, like from 6 till 9, and about 8 o'clock is the real nub of it, the high point of that audience. So Amy gets at 7 o'clock till 8 o'clock, and if we're having a morning show, an hour's too short. My opinion needs to be 2 hours is better. So if we were going to have Democracy Now 7 till 8, the morning show would kick in at 8, probably go to 10, probably. But conventionally, the morning show would have pushed forward a little. I pushed earlier a little bit. So we might. I'm just talking in generalisations. It's not just changing the. See, the thing about programming is if you can create a format before you think about the personalities. If you can, it's like an art gallery. Build the Guggenheim and then put Picasso on the wall. Create the space for the programming and then bring it into the station. And it can, the programming may change, but the venue remains the same. It's the regularity of the venue, to some extent, that the audience are coming for. Now, obviously, some hosts are going to be very popular. That's the nature of radio. And that's a double-edged sword, you know. And some people are going to love them, and some people are going to maybe not love them so much. But if you've got the venue, if you've got this consistency and you've got that venue set up, then I think you've gone a long way towards creating a program that's more accessible to your audience as a strategy, I think. Does that help?
Well, if there's anything else, there's a question I was asking, but I'm trying to get at your sense of what is how you see
The relationship of this radio station to its active progressive listenership, which is involved in electing representatives to the board and so on, and that has opinions about what it would like to see and hear on the radio station, and how do you factor that in? And I understand what you say, and I think there's a lot of, you know, a good stuff to what you say, but I also think that this radio station has to take its listenership serious, or it's going to be in big trouble.
Well, I agree with you. My understanding is that the original morning show was changed because of budgetary issues. It was a money issue. I'm not sure. Or maybe it wasn't.
We really don't want to get into that.
I probably don't.
Don't go there.
Don't go there. Yeah. I really don't have an answer right now.
Okay.
You know, it's an early, it's got to be looked at real soon.